Welcome to the author commentary for Star Wars From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. Here, we go behind the scenes with contributors to discuss the creative process behind their stories. A word of caution, these conversations may contain story spoilers. I'm Tom Holler, a member of the Delray Star Wars editorial team, and right now, we're talking to Gary Whitta, author of a story called Rogue Two. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you. So you, Gary, were one of the contributors to the first From a Certain Point of View. And if I recall, it was actually back during that project a few years ago that you mentioned to us you actually already had an idea for the sequel in this anthology, and you decided to write about Rogue Two. So what led you to this, to the character Rogue Two? What led you to that story as a choice? Clearly, it's been something that's been on your mind for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I came at it strangely from kind of a sideways angle when you first announced and approached me about the Certain Point of View book. I always was at the back of my mind that this might well be a trilogy and that you would wind up doing all three of the original trilogy films. And so I already kind of got a little bit ahead of myself and started thinking about what might I want to do, like, even going forward. For the first book, I think it made a lot of sense, given that I was one of the writers of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, to kind of tell that Ramus story that kind of filled in that tiny little bit of connective tissue between the end of Rogue One and the beginning of A New Hope. That was really fun. It made sense for me to write that story, given my association with the Rogue One movie. This one's a little bit more sideways. I had a lot of people in my social media feed ever since Rogue One came out, kind of jokingly saying, and sometimes not so jokingly saying, so what about Rogue Two? Where's Rogue Two? And, you know, there isn't one as far as I know. I don't think there's any, like, what would that even be? I don't know. But a lot of people started already kind of imagining what another movie in that, I guess, because the first one's one, they're like immediately thinking, like, what's two? Well, it doesn't quite work that way. But as a big fan of The Empire Strikes Back, this all kind of came back to my love of that movie. I'm the person that named the movie, right? I came up with the title Rogue One, and it was on a list of potential titles. I think it was Bob Iger or Kathleen Kennedy ended up picking that title. So that was like a real point of pride to me that the title I came up with ended up being the name of the movie. And it came from the fact that that was kind of the call sign for the mission when, you know, Jyn and Cassian and all those guys go still the Death Star plans. And where that came from was Rogue Squadron, the idea, you know, Rogue, you know, I think Rogue Two is the first time it's ever, the idea of Rogue Squadron is ever brought up in The Empire Strikes Back. And then there's been a lot of fiction and video games and all kinds of stuff based around the idea of Luke Skywalker and his Rogue Squadron. It's kind of a fan favorite. And so I thought it might be a cute way to answer that question for a lot of fans saying, hey, when are you going to do Rogue Two? And I was like, okay, I'll write Rogue Two for you. It just won't be quite what you expect it to be. Let's go back to the original Rogue Two. Let's go back to Zev Seneska, the Hoth snowspeeder pilot who finds Han and Luke after they get lost and stranded in the snow. That part of the movie, that whole Hoth section, is one of my favorite parts of The Empire Strikes Back. And to be able to go back and kind of make a nice little reference to the origins of the Rogue One title of the movie, where it all came from Rogue Squadron and The Empire Strikes Back, was kind of a nice way to bring my whole association with that part of the Star Wars universe full circle.
So speaking of that, I mean, you chose to write about a pilot. And as you just mentioned, that as being that section of the movie being one of your favorites. I think for a lot of folks who really enjoy pilots and pilot stories, if they were thinking about, oh, great, I'm going to write a Star Wars pilot story, they would choose something that involves some daring escape or right. Some sort of fun battle. But yours is actually kind of a quieter story that's more just about the camaraderie and the team behind being a fighter pilot or a starfighter pilot in this case. So what appealed to you about that part of the story rather than like the cool, you know, tactics and mechanics of flying a starfighter?
I thought it was a really good opportunity to kind of get into the heads of the pilots. Yeah, maybe it's sexier and more cool and more fun to write about combat, but I think a lot of the reality of serving in the military and being a pilot or a soldier is there's a tremendous amount of downtime where you just have time to kind of worry and think and try to keep your emotional self together, your head together. And that part of the movie where Luke goes missing and then Han goes missing looking for him as well, the movie does kind of touch on what that does emotionally to some of our main characters. You can see, you know, 3PO and R2 and Han before he goes missing, and Chewie and Leia are all terribly distressed about Luke being missing. And I thought it would be really fun, given the nature of these books, which is, you know, to give some insight into some of the ancillary characters that are either briefly seen or maybe even just mentioned, but never seen, to see what the emotional impact of Commander Skywalker going missing would mean to the pilots of Rogue Squadron, because he's gone for a while. You know, we know that he's gone at least for like the better part of a day and overnight into the next day. He's missing, I think, by many presumed dead for a good 24 hours. I thought it was a really fun opportunity to kind of delve into that's like the longest 24 hours of your life if you're a Rogue Squadron pilot, worrying about Luke, hoping that he's going to be found. You know, the different opinions. Oh, he's dead. No, there's still hope. You know, all the kind of different ways that people kind of process, you know, when someone that they love and care about goes missing. For me, that's what it all comes back to. Combat's fun, but where Star Wars really excels, of course, is in the emotional lives of the characters and us really kind of believing in and feeling for and caring about those characters. So getting inside the heads of some of the pilots under Luke's command while he's missing, and seeing kind of what that does to them emotionally, I thought was a good opportunity to kind of do a lot of kind of really, really interesting character stuff within a short space. It's a short story, so you don't get to do a lot of storytelling. You have to try and find a way into a story that can let you do a lot of stuff with a very small amount of space. And I thought there was a great opportunity to really get inside the heads of some of those pilots that we only glimpsed briefly in the movie.
Well, one of the things that along those lines that I so appreciated is the way that you found through some of your economy of words to characterize Luke Skywalker in this story, even though he's really not in the story. It's obviously right about him very much, but he's not present. And I so love particularly the little story that Zev Zaneska tells, where he tells the story of Luke is, you know, first addressing the Rogue Squadron, maybe upon the first or second time they've ever been assembled, and saying, you know, I'm just a farm boy, so give me some slack when I screw up, or something right akin to that. And it was just such this clear, distilled little bit of not just humor and charm that I think is inherent to Luke, particularly at this young point in his life, but it kind of made clear why Luke is such an important and natural leader for Rogue Squadron. When you think of the Skywalker twins, we often think of Leia as the more quote unquote natural leader among the two of them. They obviously have a number of shared characteristics, but if you think of natural leader, I think people often think of Leia, and rightfully so. But this story kind of makes it clear that losing Luke in this moment from a leadership standpoint would just be completely disastrous for the right Rogue group. Beyond just the fact that they're losing like an amazing pilot and, oh yeah, this guy who I think can control the force and all that. So what is it about Luke that makes him a particularly natural leader for this group, this squadron, the Rogues?
Given that the story is really about Luke's absence, I obviously couldn't write for him because, you know, the whole point is that he's gone, but I wanted to make sure that his presence was felt during the story. And of course it is felt through his absence. It's like, what is Echo Base and what are the kind of Rogue Squadron barracks feels like? What do they feel like when their commander and this person that they love and revere has gone missing? What does that look like? And I thought it was interesting through that anecdotal stuff that you talked about, you know, Zev talking about how Luke, when he first addresses the Rogue Squadron pilots, when he's first given command of that squadron, kind of looking at it from two points of view. One is from the point of view of the pilots who obviously do look up to him. He literally saved all of their lives, right? If he doesn't hit that exhaust port at the end of Star Wars, everyone's dead. No one gets away. The movies are basically over at that point. So he really is. You imagine when he comes back and after he's got the medal, kind of imagining, what does it look like after that? Well, of course he would be revered and admired and hero worshipped by the other pilots because he pulled off this legendary feat. So it's not difficult to imagine why the other pilots and why the other rebels might hold him in high regard. But I thought it was also really interesting to look at that, again, even just through, you know, kind of hearsay dialogue, what that experience must have been like for Luke. Like a guy who was literally a nobody just 24 hours ago, you know, plucked from a moisture farm on Tatooine, thrown into an X-Wing, and then ends up doing this incredible thing. The next thing you know, they're giving him medals and calling him a hero and giving him his own squadron. I can imagine that was a thrill for Luke. You know, that's kind of the realization of his dream. He wanted to be a great pilot. He wanted to be a hero. Well, be careful what you wish for. Now you have all of those things. now what are you going to do? And it strikes me that Luke may have had a little bit of imposter syndrome, or like, oh my God, I didn't ask for this. Now suddenly everyone's looking up at me thinking I'm this great man. You're giving me my own squadron. You're making me a leader of a squadron. Like, I could imagine that a lot of doubt would have crept in there. And he would have asked a lot of questions about himself. And so I did imagine this scene that Zev talks about in the story, where the first address that he gives to his pilots who are now under his command, where he comes across as very humble and very human and says, look, I'm just a kid from a moisture farm. I'm going to screw up. Give me a break here. He doesn't play the great man. There's this idea that's threaded through the story. The reason why Luke is revered by the pilots is not because he did this great thing, although that's certainly part of it, but also because he doesn't act like he did this great thing. He really does just see himself as, you know, a normal, humble person who is fallible and can make mistakes along with anyone else. And I think the fact that the pilots under his command see him as just one of them, and he doesn't try to present himself as superior to any of them, is why they love him. He's got kind of a common human touch. He genuinely cares about the pilots. He knows all of their names. He knows who they are. He asks after them. He really presents himself as someone who cares about the pilots under his command. And I think that's why they care about him so much, and why they go. A big part of the story is the lengths that they go to behind the scenes to find Luke when he's gone. Like, they really do put every possible effort into it. That's hinted at in the movie. In the story, we get to see how that actually plays out in more detail.
And one of the other, like, really kind of wonderful little just notes we get about Luke as a leader and about the type of person he is that you sort of fill in a peculiar little quirk of The Empire Strikes Back. You were talking about how Rogue Two is, I think, the first time someone mentions, you know, Rogue Squadron and the use of that what becomes a pretty fabled group of starfighters, is that we learn that Luke is Rogue Leader and Zev is Rogue Two, and there is no Rogue One. You know, Wedge is Rogue Three, and on and on and on. And obviously, and as your story reveals, and as you reveal, given your connection, obviously, with Rogue One, the film, that was intentional on the point of Luke. So take me through the idea of developing not only that little bit of connective tissue to your other work, but just, again, what else that reveals about Luke as a character and a leader, given the decision he makes about the moniker Rogue One.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously I have a lot of Rogue One in my DNA. And you've got to imagine, again, at the time of The Empire Strikes Back, you know, what Jyn Erso and her Rogue One team did is still very fresh in the minds of the pilots. They all I think, know about it. They all are aware of who these heroes of the rebellion that saved them all were. And so the idea is, I think, Luke names Rogue Squadron after Rogue One, but decides that Rogue One designation will never again be used. Where that originally came from was the idea of, you know, how, like, when they retire Michael Jordan's jersey, like at the end of his career, like no one ever gets to be number 23 again. You know, they raise the jersey up into the rafters, and it kind of stays there enshrined in, you know, kind of the hallowed history of those great players. And, you know, the idea of, like, retiring a player's number because no one else could ever be worthy of wearing that number, I think is a really cool idea. And I liked the idea of taking that into the Star Wars universe, the idea that Luke, as a mark of respect, names his squadron after Jyn's squad, but decides that particular Rogue One designation, no one ever gets to call themselves Rogue One again, because that was theirs and theirs alone. And they particularly earned that distinction, you know, because they all died. They made the ultimate sacrifice to save the rebellion. So it's kind of a couple of different ways for Luke and the rebellion, I think, to remember and honor what Jyn Erso did to save them all.
Well, I mean, that is it's a great little note in detail. It does the great thing of helping answer a little quirky question you might have had if you've been watching this great movie for 40 years, but also tether it so and ground it so much in the firmament and the core of what Star Wars is and who Luke is as a character. It's great. As we wrap things up here, you know, you chose a character in Zev Seneca that we get a little bit of time with at the beginning of the film before, obviously, he meets a tragic end. But we actually don't get a whole lot from him. He really only has like one or two lines of dialogue. So I was wondering how much of the story was influenced by those small bits of what we see from Zev on screen. And in particular, you know, when he's announcing to the over the comms when he finds Han and Luke, he sounds just so satisfied with himself. And I was wondering how much that played into you developing like the why of them being out there and the why he sounds so happy about it beyond the just like, I found Luke Skywalker, I found Han, they're alive.
Yeah, I don't know if it was really anything I needed to add. I just thought anytime you can add like an extra level of context, it helps people maybe get a little bit more out of the story. Obviously you don't necessarily need to add anything to that sense. So, you know, when Zev smiles at the end, says, you know, I found them. He's obviously thrilled already because, you know, Luke is his friend, not so much Han, who in the story, we talk about how the other pilots think that Han is a bit of a blowhard, but they all revere, Luke. And, you know, just knowing that, that Zev's friend and commanding officer is alive, of course, is enough alone to put a smile on his face. But the whole story is predicated on this idea that Rogue Squadron has this kind of betting pool that's always going. They're always betting on various things happening around the base, you know, to try and relieve the boredom. Because again, there's a lot of sitting around. There's not a lot until the Empire actually find them. There's not a lot for them to do other than just simply try to survive. And so life as a pilot on Hoth is often very boring. And so the pilots have these kind of betting pools. They're always looking for some action, something to bet on to kind of keep them amused, stave off the boredom of living in this very isolated place. But then when Luke goes missing, that betting pool as to who can be the first to find him and rescue him as a way to kind of motivate themselves, I thought was, I mean, that's really the backbone of the whole story. And that does kind of play into, it just gives an extra layer to when you go back and watch that scene in The Empire Strikes Back after reading the story, the idea that Zev has got a smile on his face, predominantly, of course, still yes, because they found Commander Skywalker, but also because he just won a bit of money because he bet on himself to find Luke before anyone else.
It's really great. And I mean, especially given that we know what happens to Zed at the end, it's a little bit tragic that he gets.
Yeah, I hope he's sent that home to his family right away because he's not going to be spending it himself. Poor Zev.
Yeah. Well, this was great, Gary. I want to thank you for taking some time with us to come and share some bits about the story and dive into the work behind it. So thank you so much for joining us today.
No worries. Happy to do it.
Thanks. And thank you, everyone, for listening. You can read Rogue Two and all the other stories in From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, which is available right now from all your favorite booksellers in print, ebook, and audio download. Thank you very much, and may the Force be with you.